Hello, welcome to my brand new podcast. I'm Julia Bell and this is Bare Naked Politics. This is a place for people who don't really like politics podcasts. It is a politics podcast, but it's not a normal one. It's not like one of these ones where you kind of have to be an expert already to understand what's happening. You can come here if you want stuff genuinely explained to you. And explained as if you don't have a really deep understanding already. You know, I'll cover bases that you're maybe a little bit too embarrassed to ask and you can't really be asked to research. I will make sure that all of that stuff is clear. And I'm going to drive it completely according to you. So if you get in touch with me on Instagram or Twitter, it's the same handle, @JuliaBell_X. If you get in touch with me with a question and enough people ask me that same question, I'll answer it. And I'm setting the bar quite high for myself for the first ever episode. I'm gonna promise you that by the end of this episode, you will understand the American election system. And I don't mean you'll kind of broadly get it. I mean, you will profoundly understand it. You'll have like a really comfortable grip of how it works. I've made the promise now. And listen, by the end of this, you'll not only understand how it works, but I'll talk about why they do it this way. Because I think the more you understand it, the more you'll be like, why do they do it this way? And there's kind of a few justifications for it. Don't get me wrong. It's actually a big argument in America. A lot of people want to scrap their election system, but you can make your own mind up about that. And then finally, I want to talk about this year because the 2020 election is extraordinary for a lot of reasons, not least because we're in the midst of a pandemic that has thrown a spanner in the works, especially because a lot of people are voting by post and because Donald Trump's involved. I mean, when Donald Trump is in charge, nothing is ordinary. Let's just say that. So listen, I'm going to get started. Make sure you're subscribed. It's a new podcast and I would love your support, especially if you're listening on Spotify. Click follow if you're listening on Spotify. Do it now so it's done. And that really does help me. And without further ado, let's talk about the American election system. So what is the US voting system? Well, you know how here in the UK, we don't vote directly for our prime minister. They kind of get that role by default because we just vote for, I'm definitely preaching to the choir. I'm sure you get this, but like I said before, I'm going to cover all bases. You know, we vote for our MPs and then the party who gets the most MPs wins. And then by default, the leader of that party becomes the prime minister. So that's kind of how it works here. None of us saw Boris Johnson on our ballot, except for the people in his constituency. And here he is running the country, which is quite weird to think about. But that's how it works here. In America, it's so different on like every level. They vote for their president and their vice president together in a bundle. And they use a system called the Electoral College. I'm going to be honest, when I first learned about that, I thought that the Electoral College was a place. I thought you could physically go there, but it's not. It's just a weird name for a group of people. The Electoral College is 538 people. And this is the insane thing that it seems so few people, especially in the UK, seem to understand. Technically, it's not up to the American public to directly choose their president. It's up to these 538 people to make that choice. Literally bonkers, isn't it? So when Americans are voting for their president, they're really actually voting in what they call electors. That's the name of the 538 people that make up the Electoral College vote. So, for example, what's the most American name in the world? Dwayne. You've got Dwayne. No, Madison. There you go. That's a nice American name. Madison is in Texas and she goes to the polling booth on the 3rd of November, ready to vote. And she's a Donald Trump fan, right? Which there are quite a few of in Texas. So she goes to her polling booth. She wants to vote for Donald Trump. And she sees the name, in fact, the two names, Donald Trump and Mike Pence, because they come as a package deal. She sees their name on the ballot. So it kind of feels like she's voting directly for them. But actually, what our mate Madison in Texas, what she's doing is she's voting for the electors from Donald Trump's party, which is, of course, the Republican Party. She's voting for the Republican electors to vote on her behalf. So it's an indirect democracy. It's really weird, isn't it, when you think about it? Because especially the way that Americans speak about this thing, they say, I'm voting Trump or I'm voting Biden. And they're not. They're voting for Republican electors or Democratic electors to represent them in their state's electoral college. each state has a different number of electoral college votes. Some of them are like single digits because they're really small states, and some of them are massive and they've got huge populations, so they've got a much larger amount of electoral college votes. You need 270 electoral college votes in total to win. So, you know, all night you're kind of counting up, right, okay, Trump's got this many, Biden's got this many, who's going to get to 270? Texas, just because I was talking about it, in case you're interested, it's got 38, which is quite a chunky number. And if you can envisage Texas, you know, right at the bottom of the country there, it's massive, isn't it? And it's got a lot of people living in it. So Texas has got 38. And this is the weird bit that people kind of think is just mind-boggling. The way it works is all 38 of Texas's electoral college votes will go to the party that gets the most votes in that state. So Madison goes into the polling booth, she casts her vote, they pile up the votes for Biden and the Democrats, and they pile up the votes for Trump and the Republicans, and the pile that's bigger wins all 38 of those electoral college votes. So say Madison is in, you know, a bit of a majority in Texas, and more people vote for Trump than they do for Biden. Cool, great, all 38 electoral college votes go to the Republicans. Does that make sense? It's really weird. Even if it's like by a tiny difference, even if, say, Trump only won by, you know, 100 votes in Texas, he would still get all 38 electoral college votes being given to the Republicans. So it's like a winner-takes-all kind of a system. And that's really what you're looking out for on election night. Who has won the most votes in a state and how many electoral college votes that state is worth. That's the most important. That's the juicy bit. Okay, cool. Biden won Iowa. Fabulous. But how many electoral college votes is it worth? Because that's what matters. And that's what you're kind of tallying up. You might have noticed that you kind of get more press coverage of some states over others. And there seems to be this kind of obsession with certain states, and some of them seem a bit random, and you think, yeah, God, you don't hear about that state unless it's an election. And the chances are that's because it's a state that's either got a really chunky amount of electoral college votes, so it's like, ooh, that's worth a lot of votes towards that 270 kind of goal. And even more so, you get press attention on the states that aren't super safe states. You know, like, they don't always vote Republican or they don't always vote Democrat. You call them swing states. You've probably heard of those. But those are the ones that get all the attention. And it's a double whammy if it's a swing state that has a massive amount of electoral college votes. And there are a few key ones. You've probably heard everyone always talks about Florida. And it's so random. As soon as it gets to election time, everyone's obsessed with Florida. And it's the case this time as well. And that's because it is a swing state that has a big chunky amount of electoral college votes. I can't remember off the top of my head how many it's worth. Let me just check. 29. Oof. Yeah. So that's a big amount, you know, considering some states only have a few. 29 electoral college votes up for grabs, and it is a swing state. It's voted Democrat and it's voted Republican in recent history. So, yeah, those swing states are the ones that you tend to hear a lot about. I hope this is making sense so far. I feel like for me, this is the kind of thing that when it clicks, you're like, ah, and it's then so much more fun to actually follow the election now that you know how it works. Because when you're feeling out the loop of something, it's fucking frustrating when everyone's kind of talking about it and you're feeling left out. So I hope you've managed to get your head around that. And to be honest, if you have, that's the hard bit out of the way. It's electoral college. It's this kind of representative democracy. And each state's worth a different value. You might be wondering how they decide how many electoral college votes each state has. And it's all to do with the size of the state, to be honest. It's basically the number of representatives that that state has in the House of Congress, plus the number of senators they have in the Senate. So if you add those two numbers together, that's how many electoral college votes a state has. The easy bit is, you probably know this already, every state has two senators. So the Senate has 100 people in it because there's 50 states and they've all got two senators each. So that bit's easy, but you've got to add that to the number of representatives that a state has, and that number completely varies. If you look at Wyoming, for example, that's the smallest one, it only has one representative in the entire House of Congress, where there's, how many people are in the House of Congress? Yeah, there's 435 people in there. Wyoming has one, one representative. So Wyoming, if you add the one representative with the two senators, then they've got three electoral college votes, absolutely tiny for a whole state. And three tiny little votes towards that big total of 270 that a candidate needs. Not a huge amount to play for. Compare that to the biggest state, which is, of course, California. That has 53 representatives. So 53 districts that have a representative each. Add that to the two senators that California has, because every state does, and you've got 55 electoral college votes in total. A lot more substantial than the little three in Wyoming. The thing is, neither of those states are that interesting because neither of them are swing states. California always votes Democrat. It has done since 1992. Wyoming always votes Republican. And that, seriously, that is a safe state because they've done that since the late 60s. Vote consistently Republican. So when the results for those two come in, there's less hype. People will be like, okay, cool, cool story. We kind of knew that was happening. What else is going on? The ones that are in really, really tight in the polls right now, and a lot of them are swing states that have gone Republican and Democrat in recent elections, so you just don't know which way they're going to go. At the moment, the press are kind of referring to them as battlegrounds, which is incredibly aggressive. And they are the ones that Trump and Biden have been all over in the last few weeks, you know, like a bad smell, visiting schools and community centers and telling everyone how much they just love that state. This is my favorite state, you know, trying to get everyone there to vote for them. So we're talking about Florida, as I mentioned before, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. Those four chunky amounts of electoral college votes, and to be honest, could go either way at this point. So that's why Biden and Trump are just all over there. And Michigan being one of those ones, it's a really interesting one. That's the state that made people go crazy in the 2016 election between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. Michigan was this really controversial one because the ballot count of the public's ballots was so painfully close. Literally, it came down to Trump winning by 0.3% of the public's vote. So he got 0.3% more votes than Hillary Clinton. But like I said before, it doesn't matter. He still won. So all of the electoral college votes from Michigan went to the Republicans. And Michigan has 16 electoral college votes. That was one of, you know, that was one of the states that tipped Trump over the edge and, you know, got him to that win, got him to the White House. There's two exceptions to this rule, by the way. I don't know if this is a bit too much information, but I find this stuff really interesting. Two states that have decided that that whole system is bullshit, where you know, even if it's down to 0.3%, you give all of the electoral college votes to that party. Maine and Nebraska have binned that off, and they do it proportionately. So they base however many electoral college votes each party gets on a proportionate outlook of the public vote. So, for example, really recently, in 2016, Maine put three Democrats and one Republican forward for the electoral college vote. So they had three Democrat electors and one Republican elector, super proportionate. And a lot of people look at that and they think, well, why? That makes sense. Why do we not all do that? But there you go. That is politics. Okay, I feel like I've got you to a point where you've got a pretty good understanding of it. Now I can answer the big question that everyone asks. And Vidya messaged me on Instagram the other day asking the same thing. She said, how did Trump win the election in 2016 when less people voted for him? How does that even happen? And as you can gather by this point, it's because of the Electoral College. It's because of that system. If it was a direct vote, and it was based on how many physical ballots each candidate got, then yeah, Hillary Clinton would be in the White House right now if that was the system. She got just under 3 million more votes than Trump did. So just under 3 million more people wanted Hillary Clinton than they did Trump, but he got more electoral college votes than she did. You might be like, how is that a thing? Surely not. But if you break it down, you can see that that's exactly what happened. So remember how I was talking about how Wyoming, which is that really small state, and how it's got three electoral college votes. Well, that sounds like a minuscule amount, but proportionately, it's quite good because in 2016, there were about 600,000 people living in Wyoming. Really not many people. That is a very small state. And it's really easy to do the maths on that. Three electoral college votes, 600,000 people. That means that per elector, per electoral college vote, about 200,000 people are being represented. Compare that to California, where in 2016, about 40 million people lived there. Suddenly, you know, the 55 electoral college votes that it's got becomes nothing. If you do the maths, that's more like 750,000 people per electoral college vote, or just under, but still. So literally, if you do the maths, your vote means three times less in California than it does in Wyoming. Or that was the case in 2016 anyway. So when you ask, you know, how did Trump win when less people voted for him? It's because Hillary got a lot more physical votes in places like California and New York, really populated places. But that doesn't mean she was able to rake in enough electoral college votes. Really weird system. But I mean, God, that's not me saying that our system's any better. Our system's weird as well. But that just, you know, in black and white, doesn't feel massively fair, I imagine, for people in the likes of California and the sort of super populated areas. And actually, this whole thing reminded me of this friend of mine, Susan, who is super politically engaged. She's American. She's a diehard Democrat. But she lives in California. So she'd kind of reached the end of her tether with this whole thing and with the fact that her vote feels like a drop in the ocean and it feels like it's not worth anything. So I caught up with her yesterday because I really wanted her to share with you guys her cunning solution for that problem. Hey, good to see you.
How you doing?
Yeah, welcome to the first episode.
Okay.
I remember a while back you told me about this plan that you had to combat the fact that your vote in a presidential election being a Californian vote is worth less than a vote in other states.
So yes, as a Californian, I mean, I think Hillary Clinton won this state by almost 2 million votes, so my vote really doesn't do anything. And then I started doing research about voter residency laws and you know, how you can vote. Because I know in America, you can own more than one house or live in more than one place. And I discovered that Wisconsin has a 10-day residency requirement to register to vote. You have to have lived in one place continuously for 10 days. And that was one of the lowest. And the first thing I had to do was find a place to stay. So I was looking on Airbnb and I thought, well, I'll rent a room from somebody and initially enter into a 6-week contract. Because this is the key to registering to vote someplace. It has to be your domicile. Domicile means this is your intended place of residency. And so my intent was to move to Wisconsin.
To vote?
My intent was to move to Wisconsin, but I happened to be going there at the end of September and registering to vote was just an aside.
Okay.
And that's my story and I'm sticking to it. And if anybody asks you, Wisconsin's the dairy state and I like cheese. Who doesn't like cheese?
So for you, it was kind of I'm going to go to Wisconsin for 6 weeks, get an Airbnb, make...
Not for 6 weeks. I mean, I could have fallen in love with the place and stayed.
Sure. Okay, so I'm going to go to Wisconsin indefinitely and kind of see it as a fun time to live somewhere else. And it just so happens to coincide with the presidential election where my vote would mean a lot more.
Yeah. And on November 4th, I might discover something horrible like the cheese is domestic, not imported. And I would have moved.
Conveniently back to California. I like it. Now you've met Sue, you probably get where I was coming from before. And in a time before COVID, she was all set to be the most committed Democrat voter. And actually, after we talked about it, I wanted to look into it. Wisconsin, which is the state she was considering moving, it is a swing state. It voted Trump in 2016, but before that, it had been pretty solidly Democrat. So, you know, you just don't know where it's going to go. Biden's ahead in the polls at the moment, but you just don't know. And it's worth 10 electoral college votes. But the population's under 6 million. So way more bang for your buck as a voter in Wisconsin than in California. I had a question on Instagram, and it was probably more of a joke, but I kind of want to answer it. Alice messaged me saying, why is the electoral, all in capitals, why is the electoral college still a thing? Because, you know, I get where she's coming from. It's clearly flawed. If your vote means more in some states than others, then that is a bit odd, isn't it? But actually, it was put in place with very good intentions, or at least that's kind of how I've interpreted it. The founding fathers came up with it as a way to cater for minority voices. Because if you think about it, right, the political beliefs and the sort of needs and desires and the lifestyles of people in like inner city New York, for example, are going to be so different from that of like, you know, a farming community in Nebraska. Those two, they might as well be from different countries, people from inner city New York and, you know, rural Nebraska. But there's also way more people who live in inner city New York than who live in probably in the whole of Nebraska. So if it came down to the winner just being determined by the most direct votes from the public, then the needs of a New Yorker would completely squash the needs of a Nebraskan simply because there's more of them. You know, people within one place tend to vote similarly. So if there's more New Yorkers than Nebraskans, how is that fair? You know, the founding fathers knew, even in, I mean, this is, they wrote this, to, they put this together in the 1780s, when hardly any of the states had even been established. But they knew even then that America was going to be this ridiculously diverse place, and it contained people with different needs and lifestyle choices and political preferences. So what they were trying to do was amplify the voices of those who would have got left behind in a direct democracy. So let's give the small states and the smaller areas a bit of a boost so that, you know, they have an impact. Great intentions, of course, but you still get a lot of people saying, it doesn't matter. I don't care if the founding fathers thought it was a good idea. It doesn't match the reality of the modern America that we're living in today. And then, of course, you get more conservative folks who say, no, this is how our system's built. Don't touch it. This is how it works. So you can decide how you feel, I suppose. Okay, you're on top of the system now. I feel quite confident that you get it. The Electoral College, you know what to listen out for on election night, or, you know, in the days that come after, you can count up which states have voted for who and how many Electoral College votes they're worth. Now, for the last bit of this episode, I just wanted to chat about how it's going to go down on November 3rd. You know, what can we actually expect from the day? And how long will it take until we know who's won? Because I mentioned earlier, loads of people have been voting by post this year, and that will definitely make a big difference. So very, very late last night, I jumped on a Zoom call with a really good mate of mine, Elliot, who is a journalist at an American news network. He's based in the UK, but he is my guy to talk to about this election, because this is the stuff that he covers for a day job. Hello.
Bonjour. How's it going?
Good. So election night in the States, it's a lengthy process. For someone listening to this who's never really paid attention before, what happens? How does it all go?
Well, usually you'd get a fairly decent idea. I mean, you could often, the result is called on election night. This one is going to be very different just because of the sheer quantity of mail-in ballots. So about 40% of all the votes this time around are going to be mail-in, and those will take longer. Due to the pandemic. So there are big three swing states that are going to probably take anywhere up to a week for us to really know how that's gone. And that's, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin.
And all three of them, are they extra annoying that they're going to take so long because they're kind of hanging in the balance? We don't know which way they're going to go, Donald Trump or Joe Biden.
Yeah, so they're all pretty key. And at the minute, I mean, they're all kind of part of that wave of previously Democratic states that Trump flipped in 2016. And those three are the ones where at the moment Biden has the strongest and most consistent leads. If he wins all three of those, that takes Trump under 270, so under the amount of Electoral College votes he would need to actually win the secure the election. And it would pretty much kind of sew things up for Biden. But on a, we might actually have a much clearer picture on election night based on some of the states that are going to call that night, Florida being the main one. So Florida is, 29 electoral votes.
That's a biggie.
Yeah, it's pretty hefty. Trump won it by just over 1 percentage point in 2016. It's always a hotly contested swing state, but the main thing is that it is expected to call on election night.
If Trump when you say it's expected to call on election night, i.e. we're going to know what the result is on the 3rd or at least the 4th of November, right?
Yeah, so in the early hours of our UK time, we should find out who's won Florida. And if Biden has won Florida, it's that spike, that sends his chances to kind of very close to being able to write it off. If Trump wins it, it makes him more competitive, but still leaves Biden with a fairly strong advantage if he's able to pick up a lot of these other swing states that he's leading in at the moment.
Why do you think Florida is going to come through results-wise, but then other places are going to be a lot longer? Why is Florida so quick?
All states have different rules for how you can cast a mail-in ballot when they start counting them. So some of them have already started counting as they're coming in, so they've got a bit of a jump. Others just sit merrily on their hands until election night and then start counting them. So it takes a while. And others actually allow them to come in for quite a while after election day.
This is just the most, for a non-American looking on from the outside in, it's just irritating. Like, can you not all please just coordinate and then all agree, okay, let's get this thing done by X o'clock on the 4th of November so we all know who the fuck's won?
Yeah, that would be really bloody handy, to be honest. But I mean, the main thing is because similar to, I guess, the sort of nationwide issue is the polarization of local governments and how they want to approach voting, how easy they want to make it.
Okay, so even on a smooth night, it's well into the next day before you even start. And this year, with so many postal ballots and so many complications, it could be a week later that we know the result.
Yeah.
At the moment, based on everything you're saying, it'd be kind of mad if Biden didn't win.
Basically, the odds are heavily stacked in his favour at this point. Last time, Trump actually had a slight edge in terms of trustworthiness at this point over Clinton. People fundamentally thought she was, you know, dishonest, whereas mm-hmm. a lot of those people that thought Clinton was far too unpalatable and too damaged in 2016 now have now kind of, they're okay with Biden. So that's where the Dems are hoping to pick up quite a big...
Yeah, people who might have voted Democrat in the past just abstained last time, and then this time are going to come back and vote Democrat again.
Yeah, it's that demographic and Obama, Trump voters.
Which is mental that that's a thing. Obama, Trump. Imagine someone with that voting history. agenda in life?
it's pretty strange to think about.
What about Kanye supporters?
Yeah, I mean...
Where is he?
So he's still on the ballot in quite a few states. And he's polling negligibly.
Cool. I think that's as precise as I need you to be about that. I'll see you on election night.
Yes, let's do it. I will get stocked on pizza, beer, crisps.
Coffee.
Coffee. Cool. Shitloads of coffee, Monster, all of it.
Yeah. That was Elliot there. I have a feeling you're going to be hearing more from him on the podcast because we're going to do an all-nighter on election night, which you heard him mention. There's probably not much point in us doing that because it's very likely that we're not going to know the result for days after polling day. But I can't not do it. I need to stay up and see how this thing goes. I get fear of missing out. Actually, if you'd like, I can take my microphone with me and record bits and bobs of kind of our reactions and all of that stuff as I go along, because it's going to be a really hectic night, even if we don't know the results straight away. And it might be quite fun for you to sort of be a part of some of that without actually having to do the all-nighter thing, because I know that's not everyone's cup of tea. Let me know if you'd be interested in that. Like I say, Instagram at @JuliaBell_X. Listen, new podcast. I hope you liked it. It's typical me, talking about politics, making sure it makes sense, making sure everyone feels like they're invited to the conversation. There's two things that I'm going to do at the end of each episode, because it's a new podcast. I'm going to start some new traditions because I can. And the first thing is, I kind of just want to recommend something each week, whether it's like a show or a movie or a documentary or like a book or even an Instagram account that I've really enjoyed following and that I found helpful. Just something that I feel like I loved it, you're going to love it as well. And it's generally going to be about politics. But this week, it was like 2 days ago, I watched this documentary that's narrated by Leonardo DiCaprio, of all people. It's really, really cool. And you know that if he's involved, it's going to be really good. It's on Netflix and it's called Whose Vote Counts? It's kind of Netflix teamed up with Vox, you know, that viral video platform. And Whose Vote Counts? It's all about, you know, why do some people's votes count more than others? And it does talk about the Electoral College in quite a lot of depth. And it looks into other things as well that have sort of blocked a true sense of democracy, I suppose. So definitely check that out. It's on Netflix. And I think episode two, I think I recognised her voice. It was Selena Gomez, of all people. But I'm going to check that because I don't want to be mistaken. Yeah, it's Selena Gomez, narrated episode two. How random, but I love that. But the one I really recommend is that first episode, Whose Vote Counts, and it'll really kind of add to what I talked about today. And then the final thing I'm going to do at the end of each podcast, which I'm kind of feeling a bit sheepish about now, but I'm going to just do it, is I'm going to give you a fact that is so juicy and interesting, and you can just store it away. And you'll probably remember it. It'll be a nice, easy thing to remember. And then you can just bring it out at the most opportune moments and kind of impress upon people your intellectual prowess and slide it into a into a discussion. And this week, because I was looking at America and how their democracy works and kind of how many flaws there are in it, it got me thinking about this book that I had to read at university. I studied politics at Warwick, and we had to read Plato. We had to read The Republic by Plato, and he was around literally like 2,500 years ago. So before Christ, this guy was writing about politics. And he's kind of the godfather of political philosophy. And do you want to know something mental? Plato thought that democracy was a shit idea. He literally outlined exactly how and why democracy is, you're setting yourself up for total failure. It sounds crazy, and I'm not necessarily saying he was right, but it is interesting because he says democracies just leave an opening for the most manipulative people to literally manipulate the public. It's not about who's qualified, it's not about who's good, it's about who's clever, and it's about who's good at really twisting the minds of the public to agree with whatever they want. You know, it could be through charm, it could be through fear, it could be through lies, but whoever is good at just winning over the public, even though they might not have the best intentions and they might not be that good at the job. And these are the things that Plato worried about with a democracy. You know, with everyone having equal power, what you're doing is you're opening up for somebody to take advantage of that. Plato much more valued the idea of an unelected and therefore undemocratic governing body who were genuinely qualified and less interested in their own career, less interested in their own agenda, and less interested in manipulating the public. Bearing in mind that he was around before the birth of Christ, and people are saying he is a genius of our time. It's kind of fascinating, isn't it? And this is why I think you should study politics and political philosophy, because all of the stuff that happens in the news, you can draw parallels with it and realise that, oh my God, people have been writing about this stuff for thousands of years. People who are very, very dead, but also are very, very clever and who have already predicted everything that's happening now. And actually, in a way, what we go through in politics is just a big cycle. We make the mistakes kind of over and over again. And it's amazing to think that some of the problems we do face now have been a problem for a long time. All right, that is the end. Thank you so much for listening. If you liked it, this is brand new. Give me a hand, share the episode on social media, share it with your mates. If you've got friends who are talking about the American election and you think actually you would really benefit from having a great understanding of it, send them this episode. And if you're on Apple Podcasts, I think you can leave reviews. So do that. That would be really, really kind. If you want to contribute, I've got a Patreon page. So it's literally the price of like a coffee, and you can, you know, chuck that in there, support me. And I also upload exclusive opinion pieces. I do updates. So people on there kind of saw this podcast getting put together before it was launched, which was really nice. And I do early previews of content and all sorts. So do check that out. I'll put the link to it in the episode description. And just finally, I'll mention, I've actually done an earring collaboration with the wonderful Un. I'll put all of her details in the episode description. I've got these earrings, really colourful ones that say vote. So what a perfect time to pick yourself up a pair of those. Shipping's included. And if you use my discount code Julia10 at checkout, then it all comes to under 15 quid. And they really are fabulous. In fact, I'm wearing them in the logo of this podcast. So you can probably see that. And you can, they come in all different colours. Sue, who I was talking to earlier, you know, the one that's in California, I said she's a diehard Democrat. She was wearing a pair in blue, of course, because that's the Democrat colour. So you can get them in whatever colour you like, or, of course, you can get them in rainbow as well. All right, subscribe so you get updated when I next upload. I'm so excited for next week already. I can help you through that as well. And if you've got questions in the meantime, please message me and I'll make sure that I get you squared up. And I'll speak to you in the next one. All right. Bye.